what I have tried to talk about and reach out about in talking about abortion being safe, legal, and rare. And by rare, I mean rare.
This is a very, very difficult issue of conscience for many, many people. In my case, I hate abortion. I would encourage someone to not take that option. But ultimately, since it is an issue of conscience, I would respect a woman's right to make a different choice.
Abortion is a deeply moral issue. The reason that I make a decision to support the choice position is not because I don't think it's a moral issue, but because I trust women to make a prayerful decision.
Well, those are some presidential candidates, Senator Hillary Clinton, Rudolph Giuliani, and Senator Barack Obama, expressing their views on abortion. You know, we're coming up to the 35th anniversary of that Roe v. Wade decision. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Many say, I'm personally opposed to abortion. I think it's bad, it's evil, it's wrong, it's sad. The adjectives pile up. But I don't want to impose that view on anyone else. It should still be safe, legal, rare, or legal, or maybe just rare. How do we respond to these arguments? And as we reflect on 35 years of Roe v. Wade, it certainly is, in the minds of many, settled law. But is it good law? We'll answer those questions tonight on Issues Etc. with Dr. Frank Beckwith. Now, Issues Etc. is a live call-in program. We're coming to you live this Sunday night, January the 6th, and we want to hear from you on the issue of abortion. What kind of arguments do you hear in favor of abortion, and how do you respond? Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, we're giving away the new book by our guest, Defending Life, to listeners with the best questions or comments tonight. 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Before we introduce our guest, it's great to be on live Sunday nights at 9 Central on Bot Radio Network. And we're looking forward to hearing from Bot Radio Network listeners tonight and throughout the new year. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. Our email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Frank Beckwith is a regular guest here on the program. He's Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University and author of the new book, Defending Life, A Moral and Legal Case Against Abortion. Dr. Beckwith, welcome back.
It's great to be on. Thanks, Todd.
Well, let's reflect first on kind of on the history of this thing from a legal perspective. Was Roe v. Wade good law?
Well, this isn't going to surprise you. No, it really wasn't a good law. And the irony is that most people at the time didn't think it was good law, even those that supported abortion rights. What has happened over the years is that Roe v. Wade has become more or less symbolic of the right to abortion. But as a legal opinion, aside from the question of whether abortion is right or wrong, it's a very badly reasoned opinion. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the Supreme Court did something extremely radical in that opinion. They took out of the hands of the states an area in which the states had legislated from the beginning of the country, that is, the area of health and well-being. This had been an area in which the states in the United States were permitted under the Constitution to legislate, and up until the mid-1960s, every state in the United States forbade abortion. It wasn't until the mid-60s that we started having laws change, but ultimately the Supreme Court said that the right to abortion was contingent upon or dependent on the right to privacy, which they argued in an earlier case called Griswold versus Connecticut, that this could be found in the penumbras of the emanations of the amendments of the Bill of Rights. And there were three or four amendments that were cited, although the justices themselves couldn't agree on which ones counted to establishing the right to privacy. But just from a legal point of view, it's a horribly reasoned opinion. Another aspect of the opinion that a lot of people don't know about is that the court dismissed or ignored virtually all of Western Christian history and its prohibition of abortion. They jumped from the ancient Greeks to the common law without taking into consideration why abortion was prohibited by Christian civilization and why. So it was not a very well-reasoned opinion, and one that had been harshly criticized by both supporters of abortion rights as well as pro-lifers.
Well, then I take it if it was bad to begin with, it hasn't gotten any better after 35 years.
No. In fact, in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is the opinion in 1992, which the Supreme Court upheld Roe v. Wade, the court actually, in a footnote that doesn't often get read, but it's one that I cite in the book, they say, even if Roe was wrongly decided, we have reached a point, this is my paraphrase, we've reached a point in which we can't overturn it because people have grown accustomed to having a right to abortion. So you have the court essentially saying is that even if it was bad law, we can't overturn it.
One of the positions, if it can be called that, on abortion that we commonly hear from elected officials or those who would like to become elected officials, and then, of course, around the water cooler as well, goes something like this. Well, I'm personally opposed to abortion. I think it's wrong. I think it's evil. I think it's sad. But I can't impose this legally, this opinion of mine, this opposition of mine, on anyone else. How do we respond to that?
You played at the beginning some of the quotes by the presidential candidates, and that is a common position that people hold. My advice to people when they hear this is to engage in a dialogue with the person that says it. And I would like to see, by the way, more follow-up questions by our pundits and reporters when presidential candidates say this. And this is what I'm thinking, that you should ask the question, well, then why do you think abortion is wrong? Or why are you personally opposed to it? And most of the time people will say, well, I think it's killing a human being. And then you can say, well, what, that sounds kind of weird. I mean, essentially you're saying, I think that a human being is being unjustly killed, but the community has no obligation to make sure that that doesn't happen. I mean, imagine if we applied that reasoning to things like spousal abuse. Imagine if somebody said, look, I wouldn't abuse my spouse, but if somebody else thinks it's consistent with their deeply held religious beliefs to abuse their spouse, who am I to judge? I mean, we don't, in fact, if someone were to use that argument, we would clearly understand immediately that that person truly did not grasp what it means to say that something is wrong. But once you say that something is wrong, that is, it's something that ought not to be done by anybody, you can't say what makes it wrong is my not wanting to do it. What makes it wrong is that it's something you ought not to do, whether you like to do it or not. And so I think the best way to deal with this is to ask the person the question, why do you think you're personally opposed to it, or why are you personally opposed to it, and use that as a way to show that ultimately to say that you think that something is in fact unjust homicide by its very nature is not the sort of thing that ought to be permitted.
Then with less than a minute before we take a break, Dr. Beckwith, what we've heard very often is, oh yes, abortion is a moral issue, and then kind of a leap of logic, because it's a moral issue, each person needs to decide that for themselves so we can't have laws impeding upon that moral decision. How would you evaluate that with less than a minute?
I think what's going on there is a kind of, and I've said this to my students many times, that when people say that something's a moral issue in our culture, they really mean it's a matter of taste. In other words, they would never say that about, imagine if one of the candidates had said, look, I think that that endangering the environment is a moral issue. I wouldn't litter, but if you want to litter, that's okay. I mean, we would say, wait a second. When you say that something's a moral issue, you don't simply mean that it's something you don't prefer to do. You mean that it's something that ought not to be done by anybody. So when I heard Senator Obama say that in the beginning quotes in the program, I mean, it seems to me he is in fact saying that as well. Realizing that his audience is going to interpret moral in different ways. Those in the audience that hold more traditional views will interpret moral as something ought not to be done by anybody, or something that's immoral ought not to be done by anybody. And those that, let's say, are more relativistic will interpret moral to mean, oh, things that I think are good, not things that are objectively good.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. We're talking about moral and legal arguments against abortion. When we come back, the proponents of abortion often say, look, this opposition to abortion is just a bunch of people trying to impose their religious beliefs on everyone else. It's inherently somehow a religious opposition. We'll see what he thinks about that. Also, what he thinks the strongest pro-choice argument is, and then we'll go to the strongest moral, scientific, and legal arguments against abortion. 1-800-730-2727.
Have you ever experienced that awkward, speechless moment, not knowing what to say to the suffering, infirm, or dying? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is titled Visitation. It's a book of bedside devotions, hymns, prayers, and Bible passages. For more information, you can call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or look for the cover of Visitation on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Visitation, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Why not send a high school age man from your congregation to Taste of the Sim, January 19th through the 21st, on the campus of Concordia Seminary, St. Louis? Taste of the Sim gives high school men the opportunity to experience seminary life. For more information on Taste of the Sim, January 19th through the 21st, at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, visit the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-800-822-9545.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Noted author and Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on why you should support Issues Etc.
Even though I live in Southern California and we've got several stations totally dedicated to what they call Christian programming, I make it a habit not to listen regularly to Christian radio. I turned on one of my local stations the other day and heard about an exorcist casting multiple demons out of a good Christian. Listened a little while ago and heard a whole panel of people on another Christian station talking about how the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem was going to usher in the second coming of Jesus Christ. You know, I just can't handle all that kind of stuff. But you know what I really like? The Christian programming that I like to listen to is Issues Etc. No matter where I am in the country, if Issues Etc. is on the program, I'm going to be listening. And the reason I like it is because we have solid, down-to-earth, biblical preaching and teaching, defending the faith from God's word instead of men's speculation. I know of no better ministry to support today than Issues Etc.
Folks, in about 10 days, we'll be broadcasting live from the annual symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, I'd love to have you as part of the studio audience up there. This year's symposia theme is atonement. Couldn't think of a better one. Speakers include Issues Etc., regular guests Dr. Arthur Just, Jeff Gibbs, Larry Rass, Peter Scare, and others. You can find out more about symposia January 15th through the 18th at our website, issuesetc.org. or by calling Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, their number, area code 260-452-2241, 260-452-2241. We're talking about moral and legal arguments against abortion. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. The proponents of abortion will often say, and it seems to me kind of a cheap shot, but they say it nonetheless, this opposition to abortion is really just a bunch of people trying to impose their religious beliefs on everyone else. How do you respond?
Well, there's a couple of ways that one can respond to this, Todd. And one is that when it comes to the issue of abortion, the question is, what is the nature of the human being? That is, does the human community include the unborn? And both sides of the debate answer the question differently. The pro-abortion side says that the unborn is not a full-fledged member of the human community, whereas the pro-life advocate says that the unborn, in fact, is a member of the human community, and both sides offer arguments. What this charge is really doing, this claim that the pro-life position is essentially religious and therefore out of bounds, is to short-circuit debate to marginalize the pro-lifer simply because he or she happens to be, in many cases, although certainly not all cases, a devout believer, usually a Christian. So in the name of tolerance and openness and religious liberty, this argument is really a way, or I think a kind of an underhanded way or a passive-aggressive way to silence religious believers. It turns out, however, that there are many people that support the pro-life position who, in fact, are not religious believers of any kind. For example, Doris Gordon, who's the president of Libertarians for Life, she's an atheist. Nat Hentoff, and before his conversion, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, was for years an agnostic defender of the pro-life position. Because, after all, the pro-life position, just like the pro-choice position, is a matter of arguments. And what I suggest in my book is that we should evaluate the arguments and not the people. That's the most important thing.
Okay, so speaking of the arguments, and I'm asking you here a little bit to kind of play devil's advocate to your own position, what do you consider to be the strongest pro-choice argument that's made out there?
I think that, you know, there's two different ways of looking at, or two different types of strength. I think rhetorically, in terms of political rhetoric, the strongest arguments are some of the ones you brought up earlier, that is, the arguments based on personal choice and liberty. I think they carry with them a lot of weight because we put such a premium on that in American culture. So I do think rhetorically, if presented well, are arguments that I don't think are logically very strong. I think they could be shot down, as I think I shot them down a few minutes ago. But I do think rhetorically they're very powerful. If somebody is not accustomed to dealing with those sorts of arguments, they can really trip them up, as we've seen in some of these presidential debates. I think philosophically, however, the strongest pro-choice arguments are ones that attempt to exclude the unborn from personhood. And this gets a little complicated here, but let me just briefly go over one way in which this argument is offered. Once in a while, you'll hear some abortion rights advocates, usually at the university level, argue that the unborn or the fetus is a human being but not a person. And what they argue is that the fetus lacks certain characteristics very early on in its development, such as the ability to communicate, think rationally, which is probably true of some of my students as well, if I could be honest. But these characteristics are lacking, and so therefore the fetus is not a person. That is, they tend to link one's value to one's mental abilities. I think that's the strongest argument, and I think it's only strong because we do connect in our culture so often one's personal value with one's intellectual abilities or one's ability to experience conscious happiness and so forth.
So how do you refute that argument?
I think there's a couple of ways that one can refute it. One is there are a couple of counterexamples that I can give, and let me give you one that I use in the book. We know of cases where people have lost their abilities temporarily. Imagine a case, and this has happened before, where somebody, let's say an adult man, gets in a car accident, loses all his abilities, let's say to think rationally, all his memories, although you know he's going to come out of the coma. Supposing the physician tells you he's going to come out of the coma, he will have to start all over again. Now, it seems to me that that adult is in precisely the same position as the standard fetus. That is, that adult is in a position where they have all their intrinsic capacities to exercise certain abilities, but they haven't come to maturity yet. If that's the case with the adult that's in a temporarily comatose state, and it still is intrinsically valuable, then in fact the unborn is intrinsically valuable as well. The other thing that's important to remember is that in reality, we don't really think that what makes harming a person a wrong is merely that they're conscious. And let me give you another example I use in the book. Imagine that right before the fetus achieves consciousness, a doctor is able to tinker with its brain in such a way that it matures so that it it doesn't believe that it has a right to life. That is, it just grows up and doesn't believe it has a right to life. It believes, let's say, that it could be a slave or believes something false about themselves. We would not consider it a wrong. We would consider it a wrong not because a person who was conscious was harmed. We would consider it a wrong because the person who was maturing had his consciousness altered before it arose. That's where the wrong lies. And that is precisely the case in abortion. That is, if let's say we're talking about abortion before, which is, of course, most abortions, before there's full-blown self-awareness, what makes it wrong is that the human being is intrinsically valuable by nature and is not dependent on his or her abilities. Because after all, if your value depended on your abilities, that means that each human being would literally have different value because each of us have a whole wide range of abilities on a continuum. So at the end of the day, I don't think that position holds up. I think there's a number of reasons, but those are three examples.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest, Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University, author of the new book. We're giving it away to the best callers and listeners tonight on Issues Etc., Defending Life, a Moral and Legal Case Against Abortion Choice. You, by the way, you can read an excerpt of this book under the What's New section of our website. It's issuesetc.org. Look under What's New. It's Sunday night, January the 6th. I want to hear from you on the issue of abortion, for and against. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. It's your chance to get Dr. Frank Beckwith's new book, Defending Life, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or 1-800-730-2727. Boy, lots of questions are occurring to me in the course of this conversation. We'll stay on track. The strongest moral argument against abortion when we come back, then the strongest scientific argument against abortion. You might want to take notes on this because this is great ammunition for the debate that you will probably find yourself in as the national debate will continue, and then the strongest legal argument against abortion. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. Stay tuned. Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, on spreading mercy one person at a time.
We run into people all the time and literally all over the world who come up to us and say, you know, at just that moment when I was absolutely down and out, I had absolutely nothing else, your organization helped and made all the difference in my life. And I'll tell you what, we recently handed over 72 homes from Habitat in a partnership with Habitat for Humanity in Banda Aceh. And for those people who've been living in relief tents since the tsunami, those 72 families know the difference one family at a time. It makes a difference one person at a time. And I tell you what, that's what keeps me going in this business constantly.
Find out more about LCMS World Relief on our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling 888-930-4438.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. has its supporters.
I just want to say that I really like your show. It's really helped me. I'm currently in my preparation to enter Concordia Seminary, and this show, I think, has really helped me with my progress. So I just want to say thanks and keep it up.
We also have our share of detractors.
This message that you're sending out is not the message that God wants the people to hear. You don't have a clue as to what he wants. You are all sinners, and you shall rot for eternity for this. You people are insane. Just burn in hell.
That's exactly why we have the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 314-505-7825. Agree or disagree with something you've heard? Call the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 314-505-7825. The Issues Etc. listener comment line, available for your comments, positive and negative, 24/7, 314-505-7825.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon his word firmly and faithfully. Issues, etc., raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. by making a tax-deductible gift this week. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can make a credit card donation by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues, etc. Issues, etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues, etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172, or you can donate by check, Issues, etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues, etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues, etc.
Folks, when you read about a natural or a man-made tragedy in 2008, I want you to keep LCMS World Relief in mind. Unlike many relief organizations, LCMS World Relief is concerned with both body and soul. Now, you can find out about their work around the world at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by calling 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438, Pastor Matt Harrison, and LCMS World Relief. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. We're talking about the moral and legal arguments against abortion. Briefly, before we go to the phones, Dr. Beckwith, let's do these one at a time. The strongest moral argument against abortion.
Moral conclusion is that the unborn is a member of the human community and ought to be protected. Now, how you establish that conclusion is multifaceted, and what I do in defending life is first offer an argument based on science, that is, pointing out that the unborn is in fact a human being from the moment of conception, and then later on make the case that those that want to concede that the unborn is human but also argue that it's not a person, in fact, fail. But at the end of the day, the abortion debate, I think, harkens back to that fundamental question of who and what are we. And if, in fact, I am identical to my unborn self and I am an intrinsically valuable person now, then I've always been an intrinsically valuable person from the moment I've come into being. I think ultimately that kind of argument is going to persuade people. I've seen it in the many times that I've lectured on this at universities and colleges. I often ask hostile questioners, when in fact did you acquire your intrinsic value? Especially if there'll be a woman in the audience who will say, I have a right to choose, and I will ask her, when did you acquire this right to choose? And she'll say, at birth. Why that? Who decides at what point you receive this right? Is it something you have by nature? Is it something the government gives you? Is it depend on the power of others? Ultimately, the question of abortion is really a question about us. And I think at the end of the day, that is, in some ways, the most powerful argument of all.
Then, if you would, briefly, that scientific argument that that the unborn at every stage of development from conception on is, in fact, a full human person.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that, you know, for all the talk in our culture today about science and the importance of science, this is the one issue on which those that often appeal to science in so many other debates, such as Darwinism or, let's say, questions of miracles, both of which I think are mistaken in some way in terms of the way those arguments are used, really run away from the arguments based on science when it comes to the unborn. In fact, several years ago at the American Political Science Association, Robert George, he's a professor at Princeton University, was debating Stanley Fish, who is now at the University of Illinois Chicago, on liberals and conservatives in American politics. And Stanley Fish, in the middle of the debate, conceded that Christian conservatives clearly had the scientific arguments in their favor in terms of abortion, and he then admitted that he was pro-life in front of all these folks at the American Political Science Association. So it's very clear that the science is in our favor. Now, what does the science actually say? The science says that at the moment of conception, now, of course, there really isn't a moment of conception. There's a point when, after the sperm and ovum unite, in fact, even uniting is not really an appropriate word, there's a sense in which they commingle, and the physical parts of both bring forth a new entity. Sperm and ovum actually cease to exist at that point. Their purpose, each of their purposes, is in fact to die, that is, for their parts to in fact be part of something else, and this something else is what we call a one-celled zygote. That's what each and every one of us was once in our development. From that point forward, all that is necessary is food, shelter, and normal development. From that moment, everything that is necessary in terms of one's intrinsic nature is present in the zygote. That is, all our physical characteristics as well as all our mental capacities. Now, clearly, the early embryo doesn't have a brain. It doesn't have a brain until 42 days, or at least brain can't be detected until then, but it has those intrinsic capacities within it. And those capacities wane and increase during one's life. That's part of being a human being. There's no one stage in human development where you have a paradigm of a human being. Human beings are organisms. We develop. And because we develop, we change. But then the question is, what is changing? Well, ultimately, the human being. And we remain identical to ourselves throughout all those changes. So scientifically, it is very clear that we have a genetic human being, an individual genetic human being from the moment of conception.
Then briefly, the strongest legal argument against abortion.
I think the strongest legal argument is that we have an obligation as a community to care for those and to protect those that are vulnerable and defenseless. And I think that ought to be reflected in our laws. Now, clearly, and I think pro-lifers realize this, that if, in fact, we were to change the law to reflect this, we would have a lot of work to do in terms of educating people and, in fact, engaging in works of mercy and charity in order to make sure that those women who were involved with crisis pregnancies would not resort to illegal abortions. There clearly would be fewer abortions. There's no doubt about that. But we also, especially as Christians, we have, I think, a duty to make sure that if the law were to change, that we be there to help those, in fact, who need our assistance. Remember that the early church was singled out. In fact, its unique mark, even its critics could not shake this, was its works of charity. That is, they didn't like the Christians, but in terms of what they believed, they were strange folks. But at the end of the day, the Christians did come through in terms of the way they treated their neighbors, and they stood out in comparison to their pagan friends. So I do think that if, in fact, the law were to change, and I think the best case for the law changing is that society ought to reflect a deep understanding of the sanctity of life, there still is the practical element that would have to kick in.
1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address tonight on the program, Sunday, January the 6th, issues ETC at KFUO.org. Let's go first to Mark in St. Paul, Minnesota, where he listens on KKMS. Hi, Mark. Thanks for waiting.
Good evening, Pastor and Dr. Beckwith.
Yes.
Bless you both for addressing this issue. Going back to the top of the program where you had the politicians, and they all basically said that they personally opposed abortion, but they wouldn't stand in the way of somebody else. I've used this personally when I've dialogued with people who are pro-choice, in by saying that, using the argument, well, what if I'm personally opposed to owning a slave, but I'm not going to stand in the way of someone else owning a slave, or I'm personally opposed to killing Jews, but far be it from me to stop anyone else from, you know, persecuting people. And I think this all boils down to whether it's, you know, the slavery issue of the 19th century or whether it's the Holocaust, plural, of the 20th century or the abortion, that it's the dehumanization of the person, and that somehow society has been able to convince large masses of people that this really isn't a human being.
Mark, thank you so much. It's a great way to start off our callers. You got about a minute and a half to respond, Dr. Beckwith.
That's a great insight. I what Mark is saying, I think essentially is that what you have in both the case of slavery as well as the case of abortion is a begging of the question. That is, the question is, who is this being? What is it? And to simply say, well, you have a right to decide for yourself, is in fact to assume the nature of that being. Once we say, oh, I'm going to leave it to each person to decide whether they can own this other being as property, you've already made a judgment about the nature of that being. You're saying that it's not fully human. So at the end of the day, that really, I think Mark made an excellent point and uses a very good illustration. In fact, there's an author, Hadley Arkiss, who I believe has actually been on Issues, et cetera. Hadley has written on using Lincoln's debates with Stephen Douglas as an illustration of how pro-lifers may be able to argue on the issue of abortion.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest, Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University, author of the book that we're giving away to the best callers and to the best emailers tonight on the program. It's called Defending Life, A Moral and Legal Case Against Abortion Choice. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you're getting a busy signal, we're completely full up, I think. If you're getting a busy signal, please keep trying because we'll be freeing up phone lines on the other side of this break. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're talking about the moral and legal arguments against abortion. We'll be taking your phone calls for the remainder of this hour and on into the next Internet Hour. Stay tuned.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours weekdays on the Internet? Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Listen Online, and you'll find 12 new hours Monday through Friday. You can listen live on your PC, or on demand, or on your iPod or MP3 player. issuesetc.org, and tune in weekdays to 12 new hours of Issues Etc.
Join Issues Etc. as we broadcast live from the annual symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's January 15th through the 18th. For a complete list of speakers, symposia schedule, or to register online, check out the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, or call 260-452-2241. It's the symposia, January 15th through the 18th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconess Pam Nielsen, senior editor at Concordia Publishing House, on the Christ-centered cross focus of growing in Christ
the new Sunday school curriculum from Concordia Publishing House.
We've been very intentional in one, teaching the scriptures. We are concerned about Bible literacy. Pastors tell us they get kids in confirmation that they don't know any of the Bible stories, they don't know any of the Bible people. So we're trying to teach the Bible stories, the who, what, where, and when. But we're teaching them in the context of Christ. And every story, every week, be it Old or New Testament, connects to Christ as the Savior.
For more information about growing in Christ, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or find the Growing in Christ logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's a Christ-centered, cross-focused Sunday school curriculum, Growing in Christ. Here's our mailing address. It's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Our resource line number is 1-800-737-0172. And our website address, issuesetc.org. You can use any of those to receive a free copy of the Next Issues Etc. journal. You can also use those to help us defend life from beginning to end by making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. Box 9360. St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, 1-800-737-0172, or issuesetc.org. In Chillicothe, Missouri, Ricky's on the line listening on KLTE. Hi, Ricky. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. I'm against abortions. In our country, we're governed by laws. There are laws and requirements for getting a driver's license, for voting, for everything else. If laws were enacted requiring women to watch all types of abortions on tape and to talk to a woman that has had an abortion at least 10 years previous, the abortion clinics would go out of business anyway because they wouldn't have anybody wanting abortions.
Ricky, thank you very much. Do you agree, Dr. Beckwith?
I think that's right. In fact, in terms of the practical implications of that, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the state of Missouri in 1989 won a case. It was one of the few cases that limited Roe v. Wade. I think it was called Webster versus Reproductive Health Services, in which there were requirements on the part of physicians who performed abortions to show women facts of fetal development. Now, of course, once you, as you probably can guess, the abortion rights groups were against that. Why? Because it would reduce the number of abortions. Once one sees the fetus, it does make a difference. I'm certainly not going to end all of them, but I think the caller is right. I think that seeing things and having more information, especially when it comes to speaking with women who have had abortions when they were young, I think it would in fact significantly decrease the number of abortions.
Richard listens in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, on WGNV. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
I have a question about Roe versus Wade. I've read articles about the woman who was involved in that case, and she later changed her position and wanted to bring the case again and have it reversed. And I don't understand in an area of emerging law why the court wouldn't look at recanted testimony as new evidence. Also, I don't understand why the court thinks it can leave this up to the states when it's a fundamental right, the right to life, and should be under due process applied to the states through the 13th and 14th Amendments.
All right, let's see if we can respond to both of those. First of all, does the fact that the original plaintiff in this case has changed her position on abortion really bear legally upon Roe v. Wade?
Not really. I mean, she did try to have the case reheard, and largely, yeah, she became pro-life and actually converted to Christianity eventually. But it's not going to make a difference, because what the court will say is, at least in terms of constitutional law, is the principle of law, would the principle of law stand if, in fact, the plaintiff were telling the truth? Yes. All that matters is the right established, not really who wins the case, at least in terms of issues like that, dealing with a fundamental constitutional right.
Then Richard's other question had to do with he didn't think it should go back to the states because it's a fundamental right. If Roe were overturned,
yeah,
doesn't it kind of have to go back
to the states? Yeah, it has to go back to the states. Boy, that's actually something I deal with very briefly in my book about the question of whether the 14th Amendment due process clause would apply to the unborn. And interestingly enough, there have been some arguments made that it, in fact, could be applied, and I think the arguments are pretty good. The problem is you're just not going to get enough justices to sign on, even justices that are solidly against Roe, like Justices Scalia and I think – I'm not sure about Thomas. I know Justice Scalia has said that he does not believe the 14th Amendment ought to apply to the unborn. Even before Roe v. Wade – It did not apply. There was actually, interestingly enough, there was a case that the Supreme Court cites in Roe, but didn't cite the portion that actually dealt with this. There was a federal court case in Ohio in 1970 that actually applied the 14th Amendment to the unborn, and on those grounds said that the right to contraceptive use did not entail a right to abortion because there was a third party involved, unlike in contraception where you simply have two consenting adults. So, but the reality is that even though I think Richard makes a very good point that practically it's just not going to come to be in terms of the current makeup of the court.
Listening on KLCV in Lincoln, Nebraska, Amanda, welcome.
Hi. I just had a question for Dr. Beckwith concerning a philosophical argument that I've heard. But I feel it's probably the strongest one I've heard for the pro-choice argument that unborn children or unborn humans are humans and persons, but that their mothers are not morally obligated to lend their bodies in order to keep the fetuses alive. And I'm wondering what a response to that would be.
All right.
Yeah,
sometimes called the violinist argument.
That's right. I actually have a whole chapter just dealing with that in the book. There's a couple of ways that one can respond to this, and I let me just give you kind of an overview. I think ultimately the argument depends on, I think, a couple of assumptions. One assumption is that somehow sex is not in any way connected to pregnancy. That is, that the intelligible point of sex is, in fact, not pregnancy. So I think it makes that assumption. Secondly, one could argue, and I make this argument in the book, that the unborn's natural resting place is in fact the womb. The sorts of scenarios that some philosophers come up with in order to draw an analogy to pregnancy always involve some sort of artificial connection, like in the example that Todd was alluding to of somebody hooked up to an unconscious violinist who needed your kidneys for 9 months. Another problem with it is that it detaches action from responsibility. That is, in most cases, those engaging in intercourse, in fact, know that a foreseeable and natural consequence of their act would be to bring a vulnerable being into existence. This is why we hold deadbeat dads, for example, accountable under the law. In fact, in many cases, far more... it's a far more stringent rules applied to them in the sense that the state could literally conscript a father's physical labor for 18 years to take care of a child that he didn't intend to bring into existence, which I think is perfectly justified. I do think that that the state does have a right, if not an obligation, to do that. So I do think that argument is one you don't often hear, but it's one that is found in the philosophical literature, and there have been a number of people who have defended it, including Judith Jarvis Thompson at MIT, recently retired, and then David Boone at the University of Colorado. But I spent an entire chapter dealing with it, and it's an argument worth dealing with because a lot of students who come across it in bioethics or philosophy classes are sort of surprised because it is an unusual argument, but it's one defended by some pretty smart people.
Folks, we're coming to you live this Sunday night. It's January the 6th. We will continue to respond to your phone calls and your email on the moral and legal arguments against abortion and give away Dr. Frank Beckwith's book, Defending Life, to listeners with the best questions or comments in the next hour. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Be sure to tune in live to the next hour on the Internet. Go to issuesetc.org. Click Listen Online. The next hour's conversation will only be broadcast there on the Internet, issuesetc.org. 1-800-730-2727. Call during this break. There's plenty of time. 1-800-730-2727. Or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mark from St. Paul and Amanda, who was our last caller during this hour, send us an email, and we'll send you a copy of this book by Dr. Frank Beckwith, Defending Life. That email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It really does come down to the question of who we all are. It's true to say that the abortion debate is about the unborn. Let's never forget that, but we were all unborn at one time. The word that Dr. Beckwith uses again and again and again, it's a crucial word, one that the pro-life community ought to adopt and ought to familiarize itself with, the word intrinsic. There are things that are intrinsically valuable. That means that life itself, and this is borne out by the basic philosophy upon which our country is based, people have intrinsic value from the beginning to the end. There are also things that are intrinsically evil, such as abortion. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen each week to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.